Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
To the Savage Nation. Here's the top story on my website, and it's open mic to Mike Friday. But this story that I saw this morning from Newsmax, which appeared in the, from Wall Street Journal, which appeared in Newsmax, really caught my attention. See if it does yours. Obama expands his executive power. Despite campaign promises to refrain from using executive powers to bypass Congress, President Barack Obama is increasingly doing just that, the Wall Street Journal reported on Friday. From helping rebels in the Libyan Revolution to granting states waivers from the No Child Left Behind Education Act, Obama is finding it easier to push his agenda without asking for approval from elected senators and representatives. Now, I could add a few things to what else he's done, such as killing an American citizen named al-Awlaki. And not getting a mandate to do so, just killing someone he didn't like. They go on. When he ran for president, Obama promised to roll back George W. Bush's use of executive power, a defining point of the Bush presidency, said the journal. The journal's writer. This pledge was part of a broader pitch by about Obama's governing style, which he said would focus on solving problems in a pragmatic, cooperative way. In other words, Obama said that he wouldn't use executive powers when he, the executive order, when he became president. Now, I want you to listen. I want you to listen to what his mouthpieces are saying. You're never going to believe this. White House mouthpiece Kathy Rumler told the Wall Street Journal that Obama has developed a broader view of executive power since his days as a senator. Quote, many issues that he deals with are just on him, where the Congress doesn't bear the burden in the same way, she said. Until one experiences that firsthand, it is difficult to appreciate fully how you need flexibility in a lot of circumstances. Now, I would have heard the same thing, I suppose, if I were an Italian in the 1930s or a German in the 1930s, but I wouldn't expect that the liberals in this country would want a dictatorship, would you? No, you wouldn't want to understand that. You see, there are no such things as liberals anymore. Liberals have become something different. They become didactic progressives, which are really something of a different species altogether from liberals. Liberals are tolerant. Progressives are intolerant. But this is an old story to most of you, and it's a Friday, and you could care less. This is how you lose your freedom, by caring less. Your indifference is why you have slime on the airwaves. Your indifference is why you have pink slime in your meat, pink slime on the airwaves, and pink slime in Congress. Shall I be a little more blunt? I'll get a little more blunt. It's your ignorance and your unwillingness to stand up for this country that has permitted pink slime to arise to every level of this society. There was a time when people spoke out, you don't speak out. There was a time when people said enough is enough, you won't say that. Pick up the burden. The American people have to do it themselves. You think that by sitting and waiting for the vote, fine. What happened to the Tea Parties? Where have they gone? And that leads us to the first question of the day. Were you a member of a Tea Party? When you were active in 2010, what happened between 2010 and right now? Were you intimidated by the Congressional Black Caucus? Were you intimidated by the unions who said, let's take you out? Who is it who stopped you from going to Tea Party rallies? Who exactly intimidated you? Here's a hell of a story, a heck of a story. ABC News doctors the video to hide Zimmerman's wound. You know the racially charged case in Florida. You know that the street thug Al Sharpton is calling for violence. You know that Al Sharpton should be arrested for inciting violence. You know that Al Sharpton should have been fired from MSNBC before he was hired. But you also know that the vermin at MSNBC, like Phil whatever his name is, I forget his name, and the owner of NBC, which is General Electric, want Al Sharpton there so he doesn't attack them for not paying taxes. You understand how that works, don't you? ABC News Dr. Zimmerman video to peddle false story in Trayvon Martin case. Did you hear what I just said? They claim that Zimmerman had no injuries, but it turns out they blatantly lied about what the video showed. They hid it. They hid it with something over it. They put a screenshot over it to hide the lacerations on Zimmerman's head. This is very disgusting. They placed a graphic to cover up the back of Zimmerman's head for their broadcast. They want the streets to run with blood. ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN are inciting violence. They want violence. They want another Watts. They want a city to burn, because whatever burns, earns. If it bleeds, it leads. If we had a legitimate government that understood this, they wouldn't be in business. ABC News doctored the video to sell a false narrative about the Trayvon Martin killing, in my opinion. And they're branding a man who may or may not be innocent a murderer without a trial. I'd like to know who's running ABC News these days. Do you? 1-800-449-8255. If you're not interested in this subject, I don't know what you're going to be interested in, but I am open for any topic you'd like to talk about. Happy birthday, Dr. Michael Savage. That's a trivial subject. I'll read you what was written about me last year by John Lilpop. Haven't heard from him in a year. California is world-renowned for goofy politics and politicians, leftist lunacy, and just plain craziness. That insanity obviously spills over to the manner by which priorities are established here in the Golden State. For example, radio superstar Dr. Michael Savage hosts a nationally syndicated radio talk show from San Francisco that is carried by over 300 stations, reaches 10 to 14 million listeners every week, and is one of the last vestiges of hope for free speech and pro-America sentiment in the media. Shall I go on, or are you bored of that already? I won't go on. You're bored of that already. They want to know why there's no designation of Michael Savage of Savage Day throughout the length and breadth of California. Why have they named it for, shall I go on? Why would they call a Cesar Chavez Day instead of a Michael Savage Day, is what he said. Who was Cesar Chavez? He was only a labor organizer. Why shouldn't there be a Michael Savage Day throughout the state of California, is what he said. Close the schools, shut down the state and local bureaucracies, and dedicate the entire day to celebrating the birth and life of Dr. Michael Savage, he asks. Can you imagine? A brilliant author, educator, radio broadcaster, and advocate for America is ignored while the entire state shuts down to remember the birthday of a grape picker and union organizer? Only in California. Thank you, Jerry Brown. Thank you, Jerry Brown. That's why everything is upside down in our town. What other stories are on my website? Well, let's go to the bottom. Maybe something else will attract your interest. Businesses face lawsuit fears as feds mandate service horses be allowed in stores and restaurants. It wasn't bad enough to serve as dogs. Now you've got psychos bringing horses into restaurants. What are you going to do if you're eating, let me be polite about it. What are you going to do if you're eating meatloaf and someone brings a horse next to your table and the horse does in a restaurant what horses do in hay? Answer, nothing. Because the psychotics running the government permitted this. The psychotics who passed the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was an act strictly passed to help lawyers and nobody else, will now have horses defecating in restaurants under the guise of helping people who are disabled. What else is in the country today? Race relations much worse under Obama, says Alicia Colon. Do you believe that's true? Well, I'll read you what she said. She said race-baiting demagogues like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson are feverishly trying to exploit the recent killing of a young black man in Florida for their own selfish agenda to boost their fading relevance. Typically, they have jumped to conclusions before all the actual facts have been uncovered. Sharpton and Jackson are once again inciting racial violence by calling the killing of a black teenager, Trayvon Martin, a bias crime, because the shooter, George Zimmerman, who was first purported to be a white man, is actually a Hispanic from a biracial family. But why let a little thing like the truth stop Sharptongue and Jackson from provoking a mob. Where is Attorney General Eric Holder to protect this man's civil rights? You're going to expect the man who ran guns to Mexico, the man who protected the Black Panthers, to protect an innocent man? Are you crazy? Let's take some callers the minute I return right here on the Savage Nation.
That Bobby Rush deserves a great deal of credit for the courage he had to go to the floor in a hoodie, knowing that he would be told he was out of order, and he quickly left the floor. He wasn't contentious about it, but he made his point. He called attention to a situation in that country that needs to be addressed in a way the man in a suit and tie might not be able to do.
So Nancy Pelosi agrees and approves of a hood. Well, I guess that's a reflection of some part of her psyche that she thinks somebody with a hood belongs in Congress. Most of America was appalled that we would be reduced to the gutter, but apparently this is part of Nancy Pelosi's value system. How anyone could ever vote Democrat again is beyond me. But I've given up a long time ago of figuring out why anybody would vote for a gangster party. Because this is a gangster party. And it's also frightening to think that Americans are this gullible. I can't understand. Unions, I understand they would vote for him. Teachers would vote for him. Okay? I understand anyone who lives off the grift of the Democrat machine would vote for them. How could any American, even a liberal, ever vote for this regime? This is not an ordinary Democrat party. This is an out-of-touch extremist wing of the Democrat Party that has hijacked the American dream. But I have a question. What happened to the Tea Parties? Who intimidated you? Was it the union thug who said, let's take them out? Was it the Congressional Black Caucus last summer who cursed you out? Who did it? Let's start with a caller in Apple Valley, California. Buster, what happened to the Tea Party?
Well, Mike, I wanted to answer your question why I stopped going to the Tea Party. I arrived about 40 minutes late to each meeting that I would go to. And I noticed out in the parking lot that there was a guy taking photographs of the vehicles parked in the parking lot.
Really? A government agent, no doubt, huh?
I have no idea who the guy was.
You know, I read yesterday that the Department of Homeland Security ordered several hundred million rounds of ammunition. Why would the Department of Homeland Security need several hundred million rounds of ammunition?
Well, obviously, it's for us.
What is the Department of Homeland Security, a crypto brown shirt force? Is that Obama's private security force? Is he going to take that force of DHS and turn them into his brown shirts to suppress the population? I mean, this is getting crazier by the day.
Well, it's obvious to you, it's obvious to me, and it's obvious to your millions of listeners out there who the enemy is. And the enemy to us...
So the enemy of this government is the people themselves who don't want tyranny?
Obviously, they are our enemy, and obviously, we are their enemy. Why else would they be in a parking lot at a perfectly legal gathering of American citizens taking photographs of the cars in the parking lot?
Well, I never heard of this before, but we aren't sure, first of all, that it was a government agent. What if it was a local leftist news gathering organization? We don't know who it was, right?
I have absolutely no idea, but I live, like 40 miles away, so it takes me a little longer to get over to the meetings. So I was always the latecomer, and I would pull in the parking lot, and there's like people walking in the parking lot taking photographs of what appeared to be like the back of the cars, license plates.
Well, I think that if this is being done to tea parties, you have a right to walk up to them with five men and say, who are you? What right have you to take our pictures of our license plates? I want to see your identification. If they don't answer you, call the local police. Because you're being intimidated. That's the equivalent of voter intimidation at a polling place. You know that, don't you?
Absolutely. But, hey, it worked because, you know, I got to thinking about it. You know, I kind of own a business over here, and, you know, we're trying to stay in business.
So you're explaining why you no longer went to Tea Party. So the union thugs, the Congressional Black Caucus, and the Obama administration have intimidated you to the extent that you won't go to a Tea Party rally.
Well, let's put it this way. There was something creepy going on that made the hair on the back of my neck.
Well, you've got good survival instincts. I hear you. Well, look, I'm going to send you a protest sign that you can bring to work called Trickle Down Tyranny. It's a book you can carry with you wherever you go. Why don't you see if someone takes your picture if you carry around my book cover? That's interesting. Why don't you carry the book around? See if a government agent takes your picture. Okay? Maybe that's the next stage in the American progressive movement. 1-800-449-8255. That's very interesting. We just heard that from Apple Valley, California. I didn't hear that one before. James in New York on WOR. Thanks for calling. Welcome to the show.
How are you, Dr. Savage?
What's
up? I just wanted to make a statement on how mainstream media kind of disorientates everything with the Trayvon Martin case, and how Mr. Zimmerman was, they said it took him about hours to get to the police station, pretty much summing it up to the point where it looks like he busted his face open on the door or something, when in actuality it only took him about 40 minutes, which is the average response time to get to the precinct.
So, well, who lied about the time it took him to get there?
Mainstream media.
So why do you think the mainstream media is feeding this hatred, this racial hatred and division?
Because they want anarchy. They want uprising. Like you said before, blood gets ratings.
If it bleeds, it leads. If it burns, it earns. So they want the mobs to burn down a city?
Yes, sir. I don't want...
Well, isn't that a job for the Justice Department to intervene and make sure this doesn't happen?
They should do something about it.
Well, maybe we conservatives ought to go to the UN and ask for help. Maybe we ought to ask the Blue Helmets to come in and protect us from Eric Holder's... Justice Department.
I believe so, sir. I mean, there's nothing really else for us to do besides...
I mean, turnabout is fair play. Let's go to the UN and ask for help to protect us from the Obama administration. We're afraid of his executive orders. We're afraid of his thuggery. We're afraid of him inciting riots in the country. And we need the UN to come in and help us. How's that for an idea from a talk show? I'm sending you Trickle Down Tyranny. Let's pray to God I'm wrong. I want to read you something from page 20. I raised the question, what happened to the Tea Party? Who intimidated you? Was it the Congressional Black Caucus who cursed you last summer, followed by the union thug who said, we're going to take you out? Or, as one caller just said, is it because people are taking pictures of your license plates as though you, the American people, are the criminals? What happened? I want to read you what I wrote in Trickle Down Tyranny, and I want to ask you if you think I got it right. Page 20. Along with the Tea Party, which the Republican Party seems determined to damn into irrelevancy. How's that for a sentence? I blame the Republican Party for the demise of the Tea Party. I blame Romney for the demise of the Tea Party. They fear you and they hate you. I blame Boehner for the demise of the party. Why? Why? Because you're not a team player. You're not playing ball with the two-party system, which has raped us and left us vulnerable and broke. That's why. They don't want we the people. They want we the sheeple. They don't want the people to stand up and say that we want a smaller government. We want less robbery from the government. They love it. You know, this morning, I had a cameraman come out to my studio to film me for an interview for Newsmax Television, and we talked. He's a young guy who used to live in Washington, D.C. He just moved here. He said he couldn't wait to leave. He was probably a liberal. He went to journalism school. He was a very nice kid, 28-year-old, not a kid. And we talked. I don't know what his politics were, but I know he's probably a leftist of some kind, as all young people usually are. With very rare exceptions. So he says to me, I said to him rather, why did you leave Washington, D.C.? He said, I couldn't stand it anymore. I said, well, what couldn't you stand? He said, both parties pretend to be at each other's throats day and night. But he said, in fact, they all socialize with each other at the end of the day. He said, and that's true for the journalists as well. They go on TV shows and they argue with each other, but at night they're seen drinking together in the hotels. He said, don't you understand it's all an act? I said, don't I understand? Who was the one who said Republican or Democrat Party? Michael Savage. Who's the one said it's two-card Monte with no peas underneath the shells? Michael Savage. Who said that we're getting screwed Michael Savage. Who said it's trickle-down tyranny? Michael Savage, but it applies to both parties. Why do you think Romney is being so middle of the road? Because that's who Romney is. Romney's playing a shuck and jive on all of us. Yes, I'd sleep better if Romney was president on several issues. And those are national security, dealing with Islamists, and lowering taxes. The rest of it's going to be about the same. He'll go along with the fake global warmists. He'll go along with all of the social agenda of the radical progressive left. There'll be very little change on the social level under Romney. You understand that? 1-800-449-8255. If you want to comment on it, why do you think I'm asking this question? Because I like an answer from you. What happened to the Tea Parties? Who intimidated you? Who intimidated you? Let's start with John in Albany, New York. John, go ahead, please.
Mike, I want to talk about internationally the elections that are occurring and that there's hope. In Canada, the equivalent of the Democratic Party, the Liberal Party, was destroyed in the last election to the point where they're under 10%. They can't even get matching funds anymore. Mm-hmm. In Australia, the Labor Party in the state of Queensland was destroyed in the last election, losing some seats that they have held for the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there is hope.
Well, and in America, in the last election in 2010, the liberals got reamed, didn't they? They got destroyed. But the media wants you to forget that they got destroyed. We had an election since this imposter was put into the White House. There was an election and a mandate on this imposter, and he lost across the board.
And since then, the Democratic Party has even lost more people who say they are
Democrats. That's right. Right. Let's go to Brooklyn, New York, Queens, New York, the bastion of liberalism. Wiener, remember Wiener? A Republican took his seat for the first time in something like 60, 70 years, once they threw that pervert out. What does that say when even liberals are throwing out liberals?
It's a good thing.
But wait a minute. It's a good thing. But if you read the media every day, Obama beats all Republicans in latest polls, says the ABC, the same people who were trying to start a race riot. The geography of the mind of the masses, the geography of the mind of the masses is controlled by a few hands. Only a few hands control the geography of the mind of the masses. And so therefore, while the people know what's going on, those who actually think, the mind of the masses, the unwashed thugs who are trying to take a white man and lynch him in Florida, for example, the thugs are using the lies of the media in order to justify their thuggery.
I think that's
a pretty good paragraph. It should have been in my book, but it isn't. All right, look, trickle-down tyranny coming to you. Stay on the line. Sacramento, Richard, you know what's on my mind. Thank you. What's up today?
Yes, first of all, I'd like to wish you a happy birthday.
I'm glad someone thought of saying it. Thank you.
I was born June 8, 42. You were born March 31st.
That's right. That's right, and I'm still kicking.
And second of all, the trickle-down tyranny, I can't find it in the Walmart store in Orville, California.
No, it's not allowed to be out until Tuesday. It's going to be in Walmart, Sam's, Costco, Barnes & Noble. All of the bookstores will have it in the front on Tuesday morning. They're not allowed to show it until then.
Oh, I see.
I'm glad you went and looked for it. It's embargoed until that day. I don't know whether it's going to be as big as the last book or bigger, but it's going to be something big. Because this is the last chance we have, is for people to carry this book around and see how tolerant the liberals are when they see the title of the book. I'm sending you a free copy in either case. It'll save you a trip to Walmart next Tuesday. But thanks for the birthday wishes. Guys, no more birthday callers, please. We know that. I got a party tomorrow night. It's a gloomy, rainy day in San Francisco town, which is exactly the way I like it. I love this weather. Absolutely love it. The sun melts me down. I melt like a candle. I can't take the heat. And I know what happens. As soon as this rainy weather is over, we're going to get a heat wave here. And then the pollen will come up, and I'll start complaining about the heat. And life goes on. I keep calendars. I keep Orchard Supply Hardware train calendars. I almost said rain calendars. train calendars. I love the pictures of trains. And I look back over the years, 4 years, 5 years. I love to flip back to like March 31st, 2004, 05, 06, 07. And it's like rain or heat wave or this or that. I don't know about you, but it makes my life have a different sort of meaning to keep records. And, you know, I've kept journals since I'm about 18 years old. I stopped keeping a daily journal when I started in radio, which is a shame. You know why? Because this radio show has become almost an open journal of my life in some regard. Certainly not my most personal thoughts, because I wouldn't expect you'd want to hear them, nor would I want to share them. But the journalism, the journals that I kept are over. But I have boxes and boxes of stuff. Who's ever going to read this? Now, I would think that as an antique, they could be sold just for the handwriting and the ink. If I were to tear out the pages of my journals and sell them as a framed copy along the lines of breakers who broke apart botanical books, they'd bring a lot of money. But I'm not going to do that. Never. Never. I wouldn't do that. Who wants to break up a journal? I'm going to just burn them all at the end. That's what I'll do, like the authors use. I could see why, you know, I could see why authors took their writings or paintings and at the end burnt them in a fire. They realize at the end of the day, who cares what anyone says? Why should it? You don't really care what a man like me says. What is a PhD and master's degrees and 30, 40 years of thinking and writing really matter? What matters is a street rat, a street thug, somebody with no credentials whatsoever who they call reverend, to get up there and say, burn, baby, burn. Now, that's the society you want to live in. Or another drugged up phony on television who curses every other word. That's the kind of person you want to listen to in our society. That's the kind of leadership that you need in America. What they think is what matters, not an educated, literate man. You don't want an educated, literate man's thoughts. What you want is a street rat. That's what you want to listen to. Am I angry? Well, you could say I'm not angry, that I don't know what to do with it anymore. I don't know how to contain it. I am so beyond being angry that I don't know how to describe it. So I take it out in my writing, I take it out in my speaking, and that's about it. I can't imagine what it must be like to be an average man or woman in this country who knows what this guy is doing to this country. When they see the arrogance of this presidency and the lies and the criminality, and they see that the First Lady is again on another junket, another vacation, while the guy in there in the White House is telling you, eat it on the gas prices. What does it matter to me? Do you have any idea what kind of gas she's using to fly to Las Vegas after her daughter just went to Mexico? And you're not supposed to say a word? Where does this come from? You're telling me this is the way to behave? They have trashed the White House. They've trashed the presidency. I'm sick of it. It makes me ill to think I'm living in a country where they can get away with a thing like this and the media goes along with it. That's what gets me sick, is that there's no opposition whatsoever. You know, wherever I go, I don't talk to a lot of people, but the few I talk to, I don't really know who they are. I mean, I know them. I don't really pry into their politics, but one restaurant owner after another, they whisper to me, they say, how do they get away with it? How do the Obamas get away with what they're doing? Or if I say, what do you think of Pelosi? They turn their face up, their eyes roll. Then nobody can believe she gets away with what she gets away with. No one's ever seen anything like this. It's like America has descended into absolute lawlessness and chaos in the 3 years since this gang took over the country. I don't know how else to put it. It's as clear as I can state it. So I will take a break.
Savage.
Okay, why is it that the Tea Party has become silent? There was an election in 2010. It was a mandate on Obama. They lost everywhere across the nation with one or two exceptions. There was already an election. Obama's policies were voted out. So now where is the Tea Party? Well, they've been intimidated by the Congressional Black Caucus's hate. Then they were intimidated by the union who said, let's take them out. Now we're getting report after report that agents are running around taking pictures of their license plates. So let me read to you from Chapter 5. Of trickle-down tyranny. Red October 2011, Obama's communist revolution. You see, you got to understand something. This is the last nonfiction book I'm going to write on politics. So it's a no-holds-barred. If you ever bought a book of mine, this is the last document you're going to need. It's a do-or-die situation. Either you vote this man out or there's going to be no freedom of the press in this country, as sure as I'm sitting here. Why do I say that? Because already the publishers are afraid to publish conservatives. They're terrified. They're intimidated at every turn by this administration. Tax breaks, access, you name it. They don't have to pass a fairness doctrine to kill the voices of the conservatives in radio. You know that, don't you? So let me read a line or two for you. You ready for this? Obama has made it clear that he hates the Tea Party. Can it be any clearer than that? Does that come as a surprise to you? The Tea Party is the American middle class. Of course the president hates them. They're the bourgeoisie that every socialist hates. They're the people who work for a living, start companies, employ other people. They're the people who pay the taxes Obama squanders. In other words, they're dangerous to Obama's October Revolution. Their economic success has got to be shut down. Obama is targeting the middle class so the big bankers could care less what he says about them or about the unwashed, unshaven, uneducated vermin who think they're promoting the downfall of the rich. Obama's tax the rich scheme is aimed at people who are far from wealthy, but who are nonetheless already taxed at a rate near 40%. It doesn't affect the truly rich, who are much more concerned with the capital gains tax. That's because they know enough not to take their money as income, but in other forms that are not taxed as income. Do you think Warren Buffett is worried about paying income tax? Buffett, one of the richest men in the world, earned nearly $63 million in 2010, of which about $40 million was taxable. He paid less than $7 million to the IRS, a 17.4% tax rate. He's advocating that people who make $1 million annually should be taxed at the highest rate. And Obama is going to take that definition of millionaire down to people earning $200,000 annually. I mean, this is just a hint of what's in my book. I don't write books with empty pages. I'm not the wall banger. I'm not the leprechaun. I don't just put my picture on the cover and empty pages in between with a picture of me with a sweater. I write Persian miniatures. Every sentence matters. Every word matters. I'm a writer. I started as a writer. I'll die as a writer. This is my life in this book. I put everything in this book. It's the last chance we have. It's the last barricade we have against these barbarians who are destroying this country. This is what you need to hear from this is what you really need to hear from Romney. This is what you needed to hear from Romney. Instead, you get a soft shoe treatment from the elevator man. A soft shoe act from him and Mrs. Romney from the elevator man. You hear? What do you expect from a two-party system where there's no pee underneath the pod? What do you expect from two gangs that are robbing us blind? Are you kidding me? You think I didn't know it? I knew it years ago when I saw Pat Buchanan, who's sitting there weeping about being thrown off television, when I heard that he got in his Lincoln Navigator after a show and the very people he was pretending to argue with, he went to dinner with and had a drink with, I said, that's the end of the road for me. Who does he think he's kidding? The guy was an insider. He was a speechwriter. Then the minute he loses his TV show, boo-hoo, they're out to get me. Boo-hoo, they're out to get me. Where was Pat Buchanan when I was banned in Britain? Nowhere. Why? Because I'm an outsider. I'm the true outsider. I don't belong to either party. I belong to the people. I'm a product of the people. I'm a proud product of the people. My father came here, and you know what he did as an immigrant? I'm not ashamed to say it. He sold things out of a push cart. Shall I say it to you again? I don't have to pretend we were poor. My father sold things out of a push cart on the Lower East Side of New York to scrape together enough money to open up his own stall in a market. So don't tell me I don't know anything about the American way. I wasn't born to a silver spoon the way Obama was. I didn't have people sending me to college. I didn't have secret money putting me through Harvard. I had to fight for everything I have. I had to scrape every dollar out of the earth that I have. That's who I am. Am I proud of it? No, it's just who I am. I'm not proud or unproud. It's what it is. I had to survive, so I survive. I never took a dime from anybody. And I've given more than I've taken. And anybody who's ever worked with me has profited from it. That's all there is to it. So what can I say to you? I see a country going to pieces. I see an illegitimate presidency. I see an illegitimate administration. I see an illegitimate media. And so I scream from a rooftop on this radio show. To what effect? To what end? To what avail, I ask myself? It's all a damn joke. It's considered nothing. Instead of a street rat, an agitator, with absolutely no education, a bum, a rabble-rouser, is held up as a role model by this administration. That's what kills me. All this education, all of this struggle to achieve, so that when my voice is spoken, people listen to me because I have the credentials to be listened to. Instead, a street rat gets up there and says, burn down a city, and the government applauds him. It's enough to make you sick. It's a world upside down. It's not Alice in Wonderland. You know what it is? It's a tyrant in the White House. That's why the world is upside down. The man has turned the world upside down. Turned it upside down. Where poverty is rewarded, where success is punished, where our worst enemies are praised and our allies like Israel are stiffed, where the military is used as a pawn, where our borders have descended into total chaos, while corporations and cronies like General Electric and Warren Buffett make off with all of the booty. That's why I say to you, this book is the one manifesto that stands between us and the deluge, Trickle-Down Tyranny. I've put all my chips on this book. I've doubled down on all my bets. I've pulled out all the stops. I fought with my publisher over several of the lines in this book in every chapter. I had a fight with their lawyers. And I said to them, if it's not true, take it out. Well, they couldn't do that because every word in there is true. They said, well, aren't you worried about this and worried about that? I said, well, what's the point of a free press if you're worried about your government? What the heck is the point of a free press if you're afraid of a government? Not of the people, not by the people, not for the people. What is the purpose of a book? You may as well just be publishing, well, whatever. What's the point of coming up with another a bad metaphor? The point of the matter is a free press is for a free people. And the day people are no longer free to say what they want, you're living in a tyranny. And that's why I say to you, where do you want to live? You want to live in a North Korea? You want to live in an Iran? You want to live in a Syria? You want to live in an Egypt? Or do you want to live in an America, a real America, as opposed to Obama's America? That's what this show is about. That's what the voice of freedom is all about. That's what men died for, so I could sit here and put myself on the line for you, because you're the voiceless. Okay, do I make my point? That's how I see it. And the Republicans don't seem to understand any of this.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. In the last hour, I gave an impassioned plea for you to understand the danger this country is in. I referred to my book, Trickle-Down Tyranny. I'm not going to do it again. I'm not going to repeat myself. And in this hour, I want to shift gears slightly, if you're on the line, to answer the question of the last hour, which is, whatever happened to the Tea Party? We had callers saying they were intimidated by government agents who were taking pictures of their license plates. They were frightened of the union thug who said, let's take them out. They thought they'd be killed. They were terrified when the Congressional Black Caucus tried to stir up hatred against them, and they're afraid of Eric Holder, the so-called attorney general. They're terrified that the Department of Homeland Security ordered several hundred million rounds of ammunition without a peep in the mainstream media. Now, why would a Department of Homeland Security need several hundred million rounds of ammunition? I said several hundred million. I didn't say several hundred thousand. Why would the DHS need several hundred million rounds of ammunition? There's a couple of answers. One, because they're trying to buy up all the bullets that are possibly for sale. That's number one. Number two, they're getting ready for something, and many of us are terrified of this administration, are that when Obama said, you know, remember that speech, we need a private national security force, more powerful than the military, better funded than the military. Do you remember that statement? Do you remember that? Everyone was chilled by that who had a knowledge of history, because he was talking about creating his own SA, his own brown shirts. Hitler's private security force was a private security force that answered only to him, that was not the police of Germany, by the way. Police of Germany came from many different persuasions and backgrounds. They couldn't be trusted, in other words, to be robots. But now you have a president on record saying he wants his own private security force. And the media, of course, let that go by. Now you've got a DHS that's increasingly out of touch with the people, that scares the people. No one knows what they actually do. Nobody knows what terrorism they're actually fighting. And they see almost a creepy person running DHS who scares them, who says that her enemies are returning military veterans, people opposed to abortion. I don't have to go down the list. What the hell is going on in this country that the DHS would buy several hundred million rounds of ammunition? People are asking themselves, who have a brain left in their head, who are not just ordinary men. These are people who have a brain, who can think. These are the people who built the country, people like you who could think. You wouldn't be listening to this show if you weren't a thinking person. Make no mistake about it. Who would listen to talk radio if they weren't interested in debating an idea? Let's say you're a liberal, a Democrat. You're listening to me say, well, look, I'm going to vote for Obama no matter what, but why is this guy so agitated and incensed over him? What has he actually done? You don't actually know because you read the papers, you listen to the news. You have no idea what power he's grabbed or what he intends to do to this country, do you? Well, this week on The Savage Nation, on Monday we talked about Obama and the secret tape, right? Then on Tuesday we talked about the Trayvon Martin case and how the media is trying to paint the other guy as a murderer, a mass murderer who hates blacks. And then there were other topics. I think it's best to play a soundbite from Monday right now on The Savage Nation. Obama's overseas. He's caught on tape telling the outgoing Prime Minister of Russia, Medvedev, that after he is reelected, he says, after my election, I will have more flexibility. And Medvedev of Russia says, whispering, thinking the mic was closed, I understand. I will transmit this information to Vladimir Putin, and I stand with you. Now, how does Obama know he's going to be reelected? Is it because the power structure has already told him that? Is it because a fix is in? Is it because Romney's going to take a fall? Well, that's a pretty loaded statement. You can't accuse Romney of that. He seems like a happy enough fellow. He wouldn't be able to do that, would he? He did it the last time, but, you know, he wouldn't do it again. Is he the eternal punching bag? Does Romney exist simply to be knocked down, sort of like the Joe Palooka punching bag? Who is Romney? Why is he so invisible? In a time of social upheaval like this, he's invisible. That's leadership? He's invisible. You got Al Sharpton, a street thug, trying to burn a city down. Did you hear me? And you got Romney sitting there without saying a word. What does that say about his leadership or lack thereof? End of question. Care to talk about this? I guess you could call us. Did you miss that little clip of the civilian national security force that Obama mentioned prior to getting elected? Well, let's play it for you in case you missed it. Let's hear it.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
Did you hear that? A civilian national security force? Do you have any idea what that is? What does that mean? What's a civilian national security force? Does anyone know? What's a civilian national security force? Is it the Black Panthers being given machine guns? Is it the Department of Homeland Security on every street corner? What do you mean by civilian national security force? I thought we had a military. I thought we had police forces, state police. What do you mean civilian national security force? What is this? The Barack Obama Brigade? The Barack Obama Brigade? What is he talking about? Well, you don't want to know. That's why I wrote Trickle Down Tyranny. All roads lead back to my manifesto. The one last book that can save us from this tyranny. You got to remember something. If you remember nothing else, you've been bamboozled into thinking that it's an open question as to whether the people love Obama or don't love Obama. There was an election since this man was elected in 2010. We had a national mandate on this man's far-left, radical, out-of-touch policies, and they lost everywhere with the exception of two or three elections. There was a massive vote against Obama's policies in 2010, but you wouldn't remember that. Even the conservative sites have forgotten that election, but old Mike hasn't forgotten that election. The Republicans have forgotten that election, too. Why they're acting like they are running just another election, like it's 32, 36, 40, hike. They think it's just an old Army-Navy football game. At the end of the day, they go and drink toddies together. Indiana, Matthew, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I want to let you know why I stopped going to the Tea Parties. It was hijacked by the Republican Party. And the Republican parties are basically the same as the Democrat Party. It's all the same. So people just stop showing up.
In other words, well, now, let's backtrack. In the beginning, the Tea Parties were spontaneous. They were independent. And then Dick Armey came along. Do you remember what he created? You know who Dick Armey is, right? A Republican apparatchik?
Yeah.
Right. So Dick Armey, the Republican apparatchik, was terrified of the power of the Tea Parties. He created a fake Tea Party, didn't he?
Yes.
Yes, he created a fake Tea Party in order to co-opt the Tea Party movement. Dick Armey, using Republican National Committee money, in my estimation, created a fake Tea Party to suck a lot of gullible people into it in order to dilute it and to destroy it.
Right.
Is that more or less, I'm saying for you what you are saying, correct?
Yes, you are correct.
So you remember what Dick Armey did. Am I the only one in the media who remembers him and what he did?
You're the only one saying something about it.
Well, okay, I'm going to send you a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny, old Dick Armey. Yeah, he's in there. He's in the book. What else should I tell you about today? Well, I'll tell you when I return. You'll tell me what you want to say by calling 1-800-449-8255. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Did you know that Trayvon's mother patented the boy's name? The guy is dead, and they're trying to sell products based upon the child's name. Do you understand what's going on here? Do you think that Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson care a whit about justice? Don't you understand that this is a repeat of the Tawana Brawley case all over again? You don't understand any of this. Many of you don't even know who Tawana Brawley is. If I said to you, Detective Pagonis, you wouldn't know who it is. I have a memory like a steel safe. Okay, that case is still active because you've got MSNBC, a host of MSNBC in the gutter trying to burn baby burn. Talk about any of this anymore. What is this now? Let me read something to you. I think I'm going to read something nice to you. Tyranny of the Egghead Wars. I think I'll read a nice chapter to you. When I was a kid in the 1950s and early 60s, I would often help my father out in his antique store on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. It was a long ride in from Queens, but I went along with my father because it was like a passport to a different world where I saw all types of strange characters. Everyone, rich or poor, wore a suit and a hat. I met lawyers and doctors, artists and sailors, stock traders and European art collectors. Once I even met someone from the freak show at the Ringling Brothers Circus. But as far as I know, I never met an Ivy League professor. Of course, I heard about them. Respectfully, it's hard to believe now, but back then we looked up to them as great scholars, wise men. This was before the Ivy League professors took over the Lyndon Baines Johnson administration and launched Medicare, which all of the sheeple thought would help the poor, but instead is now bankrupting the government and the middle class. It was before the Ivy League professors put so many restrictions on our troops, proportional response they called it then, that we lost the Vietnam War. And under the Obama administration, we are now in the process of losing the war against Islamic terrorists in the Middle East. It was before the Ivy League theorists wrecked the economy in the 1970s, causing the falling dollar, rising national debt, skyrocketing personal bankruptcies, and the worst unemployment rate since the Great Depression. At the same time, the auto and airline companies were going broke and demanding government handouts, while climbing gas and food prices ate up your paycheck, if you were lucky enough to have a job. Sound familiar, doesn't it? It took Ronald Reagan, a graduate of Eureka College in the tiny town of Eureka, Illinois, to fix the mess the Ivy Leaguers had made of the 1970s. Since Reagan, it hasn't much mattered which party was in power. Ivy Leaguers have had a plan for everything. When they arrive at the White House, watch out. Ivy Leaguer George H.W. Bush, Yale, brought us the savings and loan meltdown, which cost taxpayers over $100 billion. Now, I want to pause right here. See, you think I'm a didactic conservative Republican. What you don't understand is I'm an independent. So I'll read to you again what I wrote on page 146. Ivy Leaguer, George H.W. Bush, Yale, brought us the SNL meltdown, which cost taxpayers over $100 billion. Bill Clinton, Yale Law, gave us Monica Lewinsky, attempted to pass socialized medicine in the form of Hillary Care, the precursor to Obamacare, and missed at least eight chances to take out Osama bin Laden before 9/11. From George W. Bush, Yale, Harvard Business, we got the Iraq War, which he and his advisors almost managed to lose, and the economic crash of 2008. But the Ivy League superstar who puts the others to shame is Columbia University, Harvard Law School graduate Barack Hussein Obama. Obama brought us a recommitment to the war in Afghanistan, where U.S. casualties have risen to record highs in the past year. He's pulling the plug on our fighting forces in Iraq, very likely making sure that after our commitment of thousands of U.S. servicemen's lives and billions of dollars, Iran will regress to become another in the growing number of Islamist dictatorships that are emerging as part of the Arab Spring that Obama has encouraged. Along the way, he committed the United States to war in Libya and to sending American troops into the Central African country of Uganda. Because neither Obama nor the fellow Ivy League eggheads he's brought into his administration in record numbers have ever served in the military or know the first thing about what's involved in deploying troops or making decisions in the heat of conflict, Obama dithered for weeks after the uprising had begun in Libya. During that time, Gaddafi sent tanks and machine gun wielding soldiers against unarmed demonstrators in Tripoli. Soldiers followed fleeing students into stores and shot them in the head as they pleaded for mercy. Still, Obama refused to even make a public statement. The president was away on his midterm spring break in Brazil with his family when his administration finally came to a decision. That was shortly after he'd filled out his brackets for the 2011 NCAA men's basketball tournament on ESPN, and just before he promised the Brazilian oil company Petrobras $2 billion to drill for oil off their coast and that we'd be their best customer for the oil that was produced. Can you believe any of this? Well, every word is true because there are references. He briefly interrupted his Brazil trip to change course from non-involvement, announcing that we would intervene in Libya in order to help the insurgents after all. The key to the U.S. intervention in Libya can be found in the president's words when he revealed a change in plans. He said, "We cannot stand idly by while a tyrant tells his people there will be no mercy." Of course, that's precisely what Obama had been doing for weeks. Don't think that the president suddenly grew a spine, though. He wasn't involved in the decision at all. And I go in to the next chapter called All the President's Women. Hillary Clinton, Susan Rice, Samantha Power. They actually decided that we would go to war against yet another country in the Middle East. So it's all there. Tyranny of the egghead wars, the Ivy League, and it's not limited to Obama. And so therefore, we have to now move on to what we're going to do from this point forward. Why has the Department of Homeland Security bought several hundred million rounds of ammunition? Does anyone have an answer to that? I'm asking you a question. Why would the Department of Homeland Security need several hundred million rounds of ammunition? There are really only two answers to that question, two logical answers. One, because they're planning an insurrection. Two, because they want to dry up all of the ammunition in the United States of America. They want to make sure there's none left for the average citizen. And in either case, it's not good. Something's wrong. Something's wrong with it. But it's being done in a way that, you can't figure it out. But it takes people who can think who can figure this out for you. So here we are. Now we read many other stories, such as Obama administration turns up heat in Iran. Do you actually believe that? That's on Fox News. Gingrich, Romney, definite GOP frontrunner, probably will get enough delegates. That's Gingrich. Has he said anything about the tyranny that's emerging? No. I know it's Friday. I know you want to have a good time. You want to talk about, a party or whatever, but not today. I'm giving you a birthday gift. I'm giving you the best that my mind has to offer. So forgive me for not telling you how to make a meatball.
Savage.
You
You know, this is an interesting phenomenon. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. When I'm on the air, I have a feeling I'm speaking with my audience on an intimate basis, and you kind of understand where I'm coming from. So I move to the fast, you know, statement, and I assume you're following me. But then I realize the audience is too vast for that. So like this morning, I said there was a young man. He was 28. He was sent out as a cameraman to do a little interview with me for Newsmax TV, which will be on next week for my new book, right? And he just moved here from Washington, D.C. In fact, his plates still had D.C. plates on his car. And I assume he was a liberal. So I said, well, why'd you leave? And as I told you before, he said it got so inbred I couldn't take it, where both parties pretended they were at each other's throats. But he said then I'd see them. He said they all socialize with each other. And this is a guy who went to journalism school. And he said even the journalists, they make believe they're liberal or conservative, but they're all friends, you know. So I realize that it's an in-crowd there, and then there's the great unwashed masses, the rest of us. No matter what our education level or income level, no matter how successful we may be or unsuccessful, the government treats us with contempt. It's them versus us. Now, whether it's always been that way, I don't know. But the point I'm getting at is this. He asked me a question before he started to film me, where he said something about my politics, exactly where I was coming from, like, well, what do you actually mean about trickle-down tyranny? And then in order to explain to him what I meant, I had to start from the basics rather than giving you, the in-crowd, what I know you're ready to accept. I had to start with the basics. So I said, well, just today, the Wall Street Journal, for example, wrote that Obama has exceeded the executive order to an extent they never expected, because he said as a senator, his primary goal, in some cases, one of his primary goals, would be not to repeat the excessive use of the executive order that he saw under Bush. He said, oh, I understand. And I said, you know that during New Year's Eve, while you were partying, the president passed the NCAA, or the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, which to this day, I said, we don't know whether it gives the government, that more specifically the military, the power to arrest American citizens without cause and to detain them indefinitely in hidden places. And I saw him blink. I mean, he's a very intelligent young man, probably a liberal, well, you know, intelligent guy. But when you start putting the pieces together and you follow the dots, it adds up to what I'm trying to tell you. But you notice how I had to do it in a slow manner? Because you can't suddenly jump into this. People think you're crazy or you're making it all up, because nobody knows any of the stuff I'm talking about, in that the mainstream media is complicit with this takeover of the American mind, if not the takeover of the American people. When he ran for president, Obama promised to roll back George W. Bush's use of executive power, says Laura Meckler in the Wall Street Journal. This pledge was part of a broader pitch about Obama's governing style, okay, where he said he would be cooperative. But you have to listen to what White House counsel Kathy Rumler, a spokesmouth with a law degree, a silver-tongued, fork-tongued liar, if there ever was one, listen to what she said. She said many issues that Obama deals with are just on him, where the Congress doesn't bear the burden in the same way. Until one experiences that firsthand, it is difficult to appreciate fully how you need flexibility in a lot of circumstances. Now, you notice the use of the word flexibility? Do you notice when Obama used that word was on Monday with Medvedev, when he said, I'll have more flexibility? What do they mean by flexibility? Does he have unlimited flexibility? Does our system of government permit any single political individual to have unlimited flexibility? Of course, the answer, people, is no. It's called, checks and balances. At least that used to be the theory. We don't see the checks and balances anymore. All we see are the checks coming from us to them so they can balance their pocketbooks. Virginia, John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I work in the Pentagon and live in Virginia. And I wanted to let you know that we have, as a tactical officers, the private security force, meeting frequently the commuter train in Arlington, Virginia. They're arrayed in their tactical outfits. Low-slung pistols, steely-eyed, well-muscled young killers. It's chilling.
Wait. Well, you mean Obama's using the TSA as his private national security force, in your opinion? It's not DHS?
Yeah, of course he is. We have TSA, three to four of them at a time on the trains, the commuter trains that run from Fredericksburg, Virginia, to Union Station in D.C.
But aren't they just trying to protect you from dangerous Islamist terrorists?
Yeah, like the guys who might hijack a train and take it to Cuba or something.
So you, as an American citizen, feel, threatened by these TSA thugs?
Of course I feel threatened by it, because I think, I listen to you, I read.
So look, what's the climate inside the Defense Department? Certainly not everybody in there is an Obama bot, are they?
No. It's only the leadership that is.
Oh, you mean the great Leon Panetta, the man with such great military experience, that he was made the head of the Defense Department after running the CIA? I mean, what's that all about?
Hey, it's the senior military leaders too.
Tell me about it. You mean the senior military leaders, like the army that won't prosecute Nidal Hassan for the Fort Hood massacre?
Yeah, well, you know, we gotta make sure that we protect his rights while we're railroading the guy who supposedly killed those Afghanis.
Yeah, and I like you said supposedly. Is there any evidence that soldier actually did that?
Well, yeah, we said he did.
I see. That's enough evidence in the new world order.
And what about Brad Manning? You know, okay, maybe he did sell us out. Maybe he did download a bunch of secrets. I know a little bit about classified material. There is more chance that you will be elected president than that he downloaded 400,000 classified cables by himself. It ain't happening.
Well, there might be more chance that Teddy would be president than me, because I'm never running. I can't speak for my dog.
Yeah. It just ain't happening, Michael.
So let me ask you something. You're a sober individual. You work for the government itself. Certainly you're saying things that you believe to be true. Do you believe that I'm exaggerating when I say that Obama has a dream to create the socialist states of America?
Exaggerating? Michael, you are understating it. You are understating what's happening. People don't
know. So you actually think that we are there already?
We are at the very end crossroads before we take the big dip into absolutism in this country.
You think that Obama would take that step and say that Americans... What would the next steps be? What would they be?
Well, we're going to have internal travel documents. You know, you can't buy cold medicine without showing your driver's license and getting...
No, I went for allergy medicine the other day, and there was Sudafed in it. You couldn't buy it. You had to show a driver's license.
Yeah, you have to show your driver's license, because you might buy 1,000 cases of it and operate a meth lab.
I see. But in other words, the actual meth manufacturers from Mexico are allowed over the border.
Well, that's different.
Right. You don't want to create any individual competition for the industry.
No, we don't want to do that. Christ,
It sounds to me like you're the kind of person in the Defense Department that used to exist. I mean, I remember when Cap Weinberger was the Defense Secretary. Remember those days?
Oh, yeah, I was in the Army then.
Well, are you still allowed to work for the Defense Department if you have any military experience? How's that possible? I thought they're only hiring people from Harvard and Yale to work in the Defense Department.
I didn't get to go to Harvard or Yale. I went to a private school or a public school. And, yeah, I was in the Army.
I would think that the Defense Department's first job under Obama would be to purge itself of anyone with actual military experience in the Defense Department. In fact, they should purge all the officers who actually fought in combat, because they're dangerous.
It's okay as long as you don't say anything subversive.
They just got rid of somebody, I understand, who said something against the president. That's quite a statement unto itself, isn't it?
Of course it is. And that
now, if I send you trickle-down tyranny, would you actually take it to work with you, or fear that they would fire you?
No, of course I'd take it. I'd take it.
Would you
on my desk.
Would you walk with it openly past the TSA agents with guns slung on their hips?
Yeah. Hey, what are they going to do?
I don't know. Maybe they could arrest you for suspicion for carrying a book. We don't know.
Yeah, well, we...
Anyway, I'm going to send it to you. I do. I hope you carry it proudly to work to work with you. By the way, Tuesday's the trigger day for my book. You can't even buy it yet, but you can go to Barnes & Noble, Costco, Target, Walmart, Sam's, Price Club, Amazon, and your local independent bookstore. And by the way, if they're not carrying the book, tell them to. Don't ask them. I want 1,000 angry women with gray hair to go into bookstores and demand that they carry the book. I want 1,000 angry women with gray hair to tell these green-haired people with rings in their nose that they should carry trickle-down tyranny. Oh, my God. The weekend is coming, and I'm still in a bad mood. What am I going to do? You know, it's like you eat of the apple of knowledge, and what are you supposed to do now? Smile because it's Friday night? Is that like, is that an automatic thing? Like, if you're an American and you're not happy, you should be investigated as somebody who's potentially dangerous if you're not happy? You remember Orwell's books, right? That you had to be happy or the government would suspect you because you weren't a team player. Well, in the ex-Soviet Union, it became like that, didn't it? Didn't they send people who were dissidents to mental hospitals and declare them insane because anyone who wasn't happy in the paradise of the Soviet Union was, by definition, insane? And then they were put into restraints and they were medicated. Couldn't happen here, could it? Could that happen here? Or am I being a little too sarcastic for my own good? Don't know. Anything's possible, isn't it? When you have a complicit media that is supposed to act as a restrainer on excessive power, whatever the party may be, we're in trouble. We're in real trouble, especially since talk radio is in trouble right now. And I say that because it is in trouble right now. I'd be lying to you if I said otherwise. Station owners are afraid. Everyone's afraid of their own shadow. It's not like they've been told to do something, but they're afraid. They're afraid to offend the government. They're afraid. Well, that's what the world we're living in. That's the world we inherited. And what you have to do is navigate those waters. You have to, you know, swim the white waters, and you have to navigate them. Or not. That's all there is to it. So that's the challenge that we all have right now. And I think the burden is upon the people to do whatever they can. So what can you do? I'll have to remind you, what would be a one take-home message from today's show? Not the title of my book. I'm not peddling a book. There's one take-home message. I'm trying to summarize for you. Many of you say, well, what did Savage say today? And he said so many things. Who remembers? But it was very impassioned. I wish I had it on tape. I wish I could play it for you. There's one take-home message, and it's a simple one. There was an election since Obama was foisted upon us. That election occurred in 2010. And in almost every case, with the exception of two or three elections, there was a mandate against his mandate. He was voted. They said no to Obama. The American people voted no to Obama in 2010. Only they've hypnotized you into thinking that it's all coming up next November. It's already happened. There was a mandate. And the mandate was a mandate against Obama. But they don't want you to know that. They want you to think that it's nip and tuck, it's touch and go, and he's beating Romney in polls in Santorum, and anything has happened, he's still ahead. It's not true. He is the most divisive president in American history. I don't think he would be reelected right now. I think there's great buyer's remorse. My instincts tell me if an election were held today, Romney would beat him by 25 points. Santorum would beat him by 8 points. I think even Gingrich would beat him by 2 points. He is the most unpopular president in history. And by the way, this Trayvon Martin case, this tragedy of this young man being killed, it's the worst thing that ever could have happened to Obama. Now, you're getting reports that they're using this tragedy to sign people up for, as, you know, Democrats. That may be so. But you know who they're losing? They may be exciting the African-American community, the fringes of it, who were basically tuned out because they were lied to. They were lied to, so they were tuned out, so they're going to get them back to vote. Okay, that may be true, but you know who they're losing? They're losing the wide swath of the blue-collar white guy who was bamboozled into voting against Arbuckle, Bush. Remember, they voted against him because he was an elitist, out of touch, bankrupted the country. They figured, you know, everyone was fooled by Obama, except for a few. They figured the guy really meant what he said. He was going to straighten out Washington. He was going to rein things in. He was going to make things fairer. Well, you know, it was all hokum. But the average white guy is who swung the vote. That's who swung the vote. And that's the big, big, big deal here, is are they going to go for that game again? And I don't think they will. Is it break time, or I run through a break, or I finish the break? I don't even know anymore. Oh, at any time. Okay, so I want to leave you with that thought. The big thought today on the Savage Nation is that there was already a vote on Obama. It occurred in 2010. If you remember, it was a landslide against his entire agenda. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, as you well know, the rabble-rouser, the dangerous rabble-rouser, Al Sharpton, who is one of the most vile Americans in the history of this country, in my opinion, is trying to stir up hostilities to the extent of violence in Florida. Here's some good news. The local NAACP chapter just came out condemning Sharpton's call for escalated civil disobedience. Did you hear that? The Reverend, I'm not going to say the Reverend because I don't know where he got his degree. I'm sick of this. I hate the word the Reverend if you're not a real Reverend. Show me your credential. Where'd you get it from? Al Sharpton, agitator, said his National Action Network will move to the next level if George Zimmerman is not arrested in the shooting death of Trayvon Martin. Sharpton, the street agitator, called for an escalation of peaceful civil disobedience and economic sanctions, while the Seminole County chapter president of the NAACP reacted immediately to Sharpton's warning, saying, "We hope that the citizens of Sanford will govern themselves accordingly. We are not calling for any sanctions against any business or anyone else. And, of course, what Sharpton does, that's strictly his business. We can't condone that part of the conversation if that's what he said." So they're afraid of what this man is doing. It's unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable to me that the government would let this outside agitator come down there and try to start a riot unless they want it. Georgia, David, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, I was just calling to let you know that Homeland Security is not conspiring against the American people by buying all that ammo. There's just tens of thousands of armed officers, so you need that much ammo just to practice with in a couple of years.
So, in other words, they've already used 300 million rounds.
Well, no, but you do use them throughout the year. If you've got 50,000 armed officers and each one only shoots 1,000 rounds a year, you're looking at, like 50 million rounds or 5,000 rounds?
Well, I feel much better knowing that. So the TSA now are kind and gentle individuals. Are they sworn to uphold the Constitution?
They are.
Uh-huh. Is the Department of Homeland Security, is each agent sworn in, and do they swear to uphold the Constitution?
Absolutely.
Are you sure of that?
I'm positive.
Okay. Now, what about the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA? Do you know what that is?
I know what it is, but I don't have any information on that. I don't.
There are those who argue that it was passed that in the middle of the night on New Year's Eve, and that it gives the U.S. military the authority to arrest even an American citizen without cause on American soil. Does that not worry you?
It does worry me.
Okay. I'm just testing the wires to see where you're coming from, because therefore you're presenting a rational case in that the first several statements you made, I wasn't sure of. The last few I know to be true. So therefore, I have to assume the first few statements you made were in good faith.
Well, I appreciate that. I think you're brilliant. I listen to you all the time.
Well, I'm a reasonable man. However, I'm worried about this administration.
I'll be honest with you. I'm worried about them, too. But I just don't. It's not the officers and agents on the ground that are the problem.
No, but you have great faith in Janet Napolitano because of the sterling job she's done at the border before she was handpicked. I'm sending you trickle-down tyranny so we can stop the socialist states of America. How's that? Is it the USA or the USS of A? That's it. It's that simple. I'll be right back on local stations across America. Stay tuned.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
To listen to some of this audio, including Vice President Biden saying that we need a global minimum tax.
For years, American manufacturers have faced one of the highest tax rates in the world. We want to reduce that by over 20%. We want to drop the rate, particularly for high-tech manufacturers, even further than the 20%. We want to create what's called a global minimum tax, because American taxpayers shouldn't be providing a larger subsidy for investing abroad than investing at home.
And former Speaker Pelosi defending Congressman Bobby Rush, former Black Panther, wearing a hoodie on the floor of the House. I guess to Nancy Pelosi, that's, you know, wearing a hood is normal behavior.
I think that Bobby Rush deserves a great deal of credit for the courage he had to go to the floor in a hoodie, knowing that he would be told he was out of order, and he quickly left the floor. He wasn't contentious about it, but he made his point. He called attention to a situation in that country that needs to be addressed in a way the man in a suit and tie might not be able to do.
Finally, Congressman Bonnie Frank, the corrupt Bonnie Frank, saying that at his core, Mitt Romney is mean. I guess that would say that if Mitt Romney is mean, what does that say about Bonnie Frank? Certainly not that he's lean.
Mitt Romney is a man totally devoid of any commitment to any principle except his own advancement. Mitt Romney has been so obvious in his absolute lack of principle that even the people who he temporarily says, I agree with you, are not reassured, because they understand that when the wind blows, there he will go again. There's also in Mitt Romney, there is a meanness at his core.
Yeah.
You know, he ran ads. I never thought I would feel some sympathy for Newt Gingrich. But Mitt Romney, with enormous amounts of money at his beck and call from people who want him to treat them right and protect their riches, has run the most relentlessly savage campaign against anybody who dared get in his way.
And here are the latest headlines today on michaelsavage.com and on other sites. Top of the website, borders, language, culture, michaelsavage.com, Obama expands his executive power. Despite campaign promises to refrain from bypassing Congress, the tyrant-in-chief has used executive orders exactly as he said he would not do. Now you get what I'm saying in trickle-down tyranny? Happy birthday, Dr. Michael Savage. Read that article. ABC News doctored the video to hide Zimmerman's head wound. They used the graphic to cover the back of his head. If you can believe this, it's beyond belief. Another $17 trillion surprise found in Obamacare. $17 trillion hidden in it. A Muslim father kills daughter for having U.S. actors on her mobile phone. My God. Egyptian father throws daughter in Nile over marriage. Why are we bringing more of these people into this country? Who's doing this to us? Afghan policeman shoots 9 fellow officers while they were sleeping. Navy won't build as many ships as planned. They shouldn't even have ships. I think the Obama Navy doesn't really need ships. They just need birthing clinics and diversity training sessions. Parents of murdered UK students criticize Obama because not talking about the death of these white boys at the hands of a black man. Condo association orders an owner to remove a Jewish mezuzah from her doorway. Race relations, much worse under Obama. Arrested for reading the Bible? Yes, that's what it's come to in California. TSA manager accused of running a prostitution ring. Iran wants a second Holocaust. These are headlines from michaelsavage.com, in case you don't know what you're listening to. All the stories that made it to some of the newspapers and sites around the world but didn't make it to your local paper, they're on my website. Illegal alien accused in San Francisco massacre of 5 people. Romney rivals tilting at windmills in convention ploy, says the Washington Times. I'm still banned from entering the UK, but where are my human rights? Asks Human Events. 300-pound hero flight passenger said he had no choice when he took down a crazy captain. Fox News, United Airlines bans transport of certain breeds of dogs. Finally, on the bottom left of the website, hear Savage talk about the most important book he's ever written. And it's a little sound chip in the site on michaelsavage.com. What else is in the news? Well, let's see. Biden calls for a global tax. Come Sunday, America will have the highest corporate tax in the world. Peggy Noonan says Obama's becoming creepy. She must be listening to someone's show that I know. Zbigniew Brzezinski, that left-wing hack who gave us the Arab disaster, says Romney lacks grasp and that John Kerry would be the best Secretary of State. Sure, for China that would be true. Iran helps Syria ship oil to, not Brooklyn, China. In Israel, Palestinians have lined up around the border and they've turned violent. Dems are using the Trayvon hoodie rallies to register voters, as we predicted on this show. I told you so. New study suggests sugar contributes to heart disease and cancer. I told you sugar is the great, great disease causer in our society, worse than fat. Nightclub hosts Food Stamp Friday discount night. The Solicitor General, who's stumbling in front of the Supreme Court, not to the White House, they say he's done a terrific job. Texas man yells, "Go Cowboys!" before execution. Man gets stuck in love cuffs at an adult novelty shop. Two men torch themselves in Italy as hardship bites. Well, I guess the last story we should tell you about in the news is something about Viagra. You're not going to believe it, but it's true. Did you hear about this one? There's always a Viagra joke. Well, here's a new one. Oh, Italian pharmacists threaten a Viagra strike.
Talk about labor problems.
Talk about when pasta was spaghetti. All this and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Mitt Romney is a man totally devoid of any commitment to any principle except his own advancement. Mitt Romney has been so obvious in his absolute lack of principle that even the people who he temporarily says, "I agree with you," are not reassured because they understand that when the wind blows, there he will go again. There's also in Mitt Romney, there is a meanness at his core.
Yeah.
You know, he ran ads. I never thought I would feel some sympathy for Newt Gingrich. But Mitt Romney, with enormous amounts of money at his beck and call from people who want him to treat them right and protect their riches, has run the most relentlessly savage campaign against anybody who dared get in his way.
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers softish throat drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with, the ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better. Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com.
Savage.
I was trained in science before becoming a talk show host. And I have to tell you that perhaps I'm a little too pragmatic to get too excited about something that isn't real. I was trained in botany. I was trained in chemistry. I was trained in pharmacology. I was trained in anthropology. Then I got a PhD in human nutrition and epidemiology from the University of California at Berkeley, of which I'm very proud. And I understand that there are real things and then there are fake things. And what I was taught as a young graduate student, not at Harvard in law, but in other places and not in law, that certain things are and certain things are not. And you can't go around inventing things if you want to call yourself a scientist. You look at a flower, it's springtime here in Northern California. I'll kill the person that's ever calling me. They call me during a show. Now, I'm getting a lot of robocalls on my cell phone lately, by the way, during, where is this? Hello, who's calling? Hello? I'm on the radio, I gotta go. See, this is the respect I get. Another robocall. I can't believe this. They don't even have the decency to know what you do for a living. They wanted me to vote for a Democrat or something. But what I was saying to you is quite simple, which is it's springtime in Northern California. So my fruit trees are beginning to flower. Those that are in the sun rather than the shade have already flowered. Those that are still in the shady part of the hill haven't even flowered yet, nor even budded. And I'm amazed to see that you know, I wait for the fruits of late August, which are peaches. I love peaches and I love the other fruits. And it's a miracle to me to watch the seasons change. And I love seeing a tree going from fruit, first of all, barren, right? Then it slightly buds, then a flower comes out. And then you see the tree going through its life cycle, in essence. The flower turns into fruit. And you have to understand that without a flower, you can't have a fruit. And what is the purpose of a fruit in a plant? The fruit contains seeds. The seeds are then dropped to the fruit falls to the ground, and the seeds go into the ground and reproduce the plant. That's nature's cycle. Okay, but we, of course, interrupt that cycle by eating the fruit. So why am I telling you about a typical or complete flower? I'm not going to give you a botany lesson, but the fact of the matter is I'm very much connected to the earth. I'm very much a man who watches the cycles of nature. And to me, politics are somewhat not only artificial in the sense that everybody lies and we expect the lie as the truth, meaning the lie becomes the truth. If a politician doesn't lie, we consider it to be an anomaly. So where is the shock here, is what I'm getting at. Did you expect Obama to go to Harvard and be seen with a yarmulke dancing the horror with Jewish students at a Hillel gathering? He was an affirmative action kid from Hawaii, groomed by rich leftists in Hawaii to become a very important man in America, and little did they know he would become president. They dreamed it beyond their wildest dreams. This radical kid, who had a Caucasian mother and an African father, was the perfect, perfect person for the Fabian socialist who dreamed of the revolution in America, the revolution without firing a shot. Remember, these are not screaming bomb throwers. That would never work in this country. The people wouldn't stand for it. What this is a group of Fabian socialists. You have to understand how this works. The Fabian socialists advanced their agenda through gradualism by working within the system to achieve their socialist slash communist slash Marxist slash Leninist goals. Even then, Obama's plan seems to have been to reach the highest level of power in America through this method. All right, let's move on. Today, before my show, I was with my little dog, Teddy. It's a beautiful day, gorgeous weather, and I'm just enjoying it and this and that, watching the trees bloom. And I gave Teddy a little hair trim on his mouth, a little poodle. When the hair grows in, he looks like a schnauzer, so I clip it off so he has a little pointy nose, and then I reward him with a piece of provolone cheese. He may not be a German, what do they call it? Is a poodle? A poodle's supposed to be German. They're actually French, I think. The French poodle's actually German, right, not French. But I think there may be a little Italian in him because he actually prefers provolone to all other cheeses. So we were playing today, and I was trimming his little face to make it look pointy while I leave all the other hair on his body out like a bear. And then I started to look at something else. You know, I'm always writing a book or two, right? So Trickle Down Tyranny is finished. It's in the covers. It's coming out. I've been telling you about it. Next Christmas, I know I shouldn't talk about it, but I'm going to tell you why in a minute. It's a little political. I have a book that's going to come out about my childhood stories called Train Tracks. And I know it's going to be a smash hit for the Christmas holidays because the election will be over. Nobody will want to hear about politics. And these stories are real. And they're good. And some of them you've never heard or seen before. So I was writing one about my travels by train out to visit cousins in Pennsylvania when I was a little boy. And how my mother would pick us up on Wednesdays in PS 48 in the Bronx. You know, Thanksgiving holiday, you're off Thursday and Friday, but she'd come get us around 11 in the morning on Wednesday. From the time I went to school at 9 o'clock till 11, felt like 24 hours to me, till she finally got us. But I was so happy to get out of that school and go down by subway to Penn Station and then get into the big, steaming, hissing locomotive. Now, think about what this is like to a kid 6 years old, how big a locomotive looks to a little kid. And I talked about the whole train ride and going to visit my cousins and my aunt and my uncle. But little did I know, I had an uncle out there. I didn't know anything about him. I found an obituary written about him recently. He died 10 years ago or so. I only knew he was a factory worker. They were poor, and they had to leave New York, and he took a job as a factory worker in order to make a living, and he worked his way up to becoming a foreman. From being a foreman in a factory, he got into Democrat politics, And then he got a job with the state, some kind of, I don't know, the cigarette tax revenue. I don't know what he did, but he did nice, you know, did very nice for himself. Didn't become rich, but the man had lots of friends. He was loved in the town. He was a Democrat ward guy, like a ward leader. He looked like a Max Bayer, big guy, nice guy, affable. Everyone loved him. But I found out that Uncle Abe dared back a Republican once. Now, remember, this is a factory town in Pennsylvania. All blue-collar factory town in those days. You were considered a turncoat if you helped a Republican. He helped a Republican, got the Republican elected, and they threw him out of his job. They took away his seat as a zoning guy. They threw him off the board. The Democrats got even with him because he dared step out of line. And instead of rolling over, I read in the obituary that he ran against the guy who threw him off the board, came back 2 years later, and then said to everybody, if you do to me or anyone else what he did to me, because I backed the guy who I believe is good, he said, I'll do to you what I did to him, and I'll get you thrown out of office. I didn't know he had it in him. I only knew him as a nice, easygoing guy who I love very much. I didn't know much about him. I had no idea. But what I'm saying is, looking back at this story from the eyes of a Michael Savage who was now at the age that he died or close to it, I say to myself, look at this. There must be politics somewhere in the family genealogy. He was a small town guy who was a big shot, you know, a big shot in a little pond, big fish in a little pond. And the fact of the matter is, he actually was a man who spoke the truth. They said he told you exactly the way he felt. They said everyone loved Abe because he didn't hide anything. He would go to work for somebody for nothing if he liked him. If anyone came to him for anything, he would take the money out of his pocket. He turned his pockets inside out. So I said he was probably a wonderful guy. And they dared back a Republican in that little factory Democrat mill town, and they threw him out of office, but he fought his way back. So I was very proud to actually find that in reading his obituary. I found it in a crumpled old clipping in a closet I have up here in one of my studios as I was writing this story today for my book, which will come out next spring, called Train Track. Obamacare. The arguments are over. And if the so-called conservatives in the House are a guide, then who knows what the so-called conservatives on the Supreme Court are going to do. Well, joining us right now to discuss what he thinks of the Obamacare case is Heritage Foundation senior legal fellow Robert Ault. Robert Ault, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Great to be on the show again.
Give us your take on this big, big issue of Obamacare.
Well, I think you know, the left was relatively shocked by what happened. You've had them sort of backpedaling, trying to blame Verrilli, but I think a lot of your listeners probably weren't surprised. If you followed the case, you know, in fact, that the government had a very difficult argument to make. As Justice Kennedy said in his question to the government, they've got a very heavy burden in this case, and that burden is one that goes to fundamentally altering the relationship between the federal government and the individual, and that's really what was at stake in this case. So, I think those who are following the case, the day two, the main event, the individual mandate. This is a question of whether or not the government can force every individual from cradle to grave to purchase and maintain insurance. The questions in general, of course, as always, all eyes on Justice Kennedy, seen as the swing vote on the court. And I think if you were the government, you had to be very disheartened by his questions, framing it as he did as a case pitting changing the relationship between the federal government and the individual in a fundamental way. In those cases where in fact Kennedy has split from Republican appointees in the past, he generally does so in favor of the individual and his perception of the individual's rights. So whether it's in privacy cases, consensual sodomy or abortion, or in Guantanamo cases, that's sort of the key factor. So if you're the Solicitor General arguing this case and you get that question from Kennedy, your stomach has to sink. We move on to the next day, severability. This is the question of what it is that the court will do if they strike down the mandate. You've got
a statute in this case that's as long as a good Russian novel. But the mandate is only 5 pages of that statute. What do they do if that's unconstitutional? Do they just tear out those 5 pages? Do they throw out the whole law? Do they do something in between? And here, a lot of conversation between Kennedy and Paul Clement, who was arguing on behalf of the states, seemingly agreeing that the mandate is really the heart of the Obamacare statute, that the law just doesn't operate without it. And again, questions from Kennedy could not be providing great comfort to the administration at this point. He seemed to be struggling with whether or not the court would be acting in a more activist fashion in trying to rewrite the law, trying to figure out what the unintended consequences were, rather than simply striking down the entire law. So in general, I think you have to say that the government had a pretty bad week in terms of oral arguments.
Look, you're a legal expert, so what do you think the justices were debating earlier today when they were discussing this case?
My guess is at this point, again, they were meeting in conference, they discuss it briefly, and then they vote. From conversations that the justices have had on other occasions, they've suggested that, generally speaking, the conversation is relatively brisk. By the time they get there, most of the time they state the reasons for their votes, but most of the time they've made up their minds. So my guess is they went around the table, they cast their votes, and at that point they do the initial assignment of who will be writing the majority and presumably dissenting opinions. That doesn't necessarily lock it in. We know historically from some of the justices' records that the whole conference is a very private proceeding, probably one of the most private in all of Washington. Only the justices are permitted in the conference room, not even the clerks during the voting proceeding. But after the assignment is made, they circulate the opinions. And at times in the past, a justice has chosen to actually switch their votes based upon what was written or to split off and write a concurring opinion. So while the vote was taken today, it may not be, it's not necessarily set in stone. And of course, we're not going to know anything until they hand down their decision, which is anticipated most likely on the last day of the court, which would probably be the last week of June.
The individual mandate, as you know, is Obama's version of my book title, Trickle Down Tyranny. Do you actually think Obamacare can survive without the individual mandate? How?
It certainly can't survive in the way that Congress intended, and that's the test they're supposed to be applying. Will the law operate as Congress intended? The Obama administration itself has had to concede that if you tear out the individual mandate, at the very least, the court should strike down the requirement that insurance companies cover individuals with pre-existing conditions, because they've said, look, if you do that, that will ultimately lead to the bankruptcy of the insurance industry. If folks can just wait till they're sick, march in and get coverage, there's just no way they can survive at that point. But my colleague Ed Heiselmeyer and I published in a paper a little over a week ago before the oral arguments, there's many other provisions throughout the law that simply don't operate. And there's just no reason to draw the line there where the government did. And that sort of line of argument seemed persuasive, for instance, to the Chief Justice, who said, you know, look, I need to understand why it is we should draw the line there. Because, in fact, if you take a look, for instance, the pre-existing coverage provisions have already kicked in for minors. And what you're already seeing is the negative effects that the government claims will happen if it kicks in for adults. Insurance companies are stopping offering child-only policies in a number of states based upon this pre-existing coverage provision. There's a number of other provisions throughout the law that, quite frankly, without the mandate, are going to drive up costs and they're going to drive people out of insurance. So, again, it simply cannot operate the way Congress intended. There's all kinds of problems with this bill as a policy matter, but there's all kinds of problems in how it will operate without the mandate. So it really should just be struck down in its entirety.
Okay, so what are the different possible outcomes?
Well, the lowest probability outcome, remember, on the first day of oral arguments, they had the discussion of the Anti-Injunction Act. And that was the question of whether or not they could even get to the merits on the mandate, or whether they had to wait until after the penalty had already been paid by someone. The lowest probability outcome would be that they would say that the Anti-Injunction Act applies. I don't think anyone thinks that's going to happen at this point. All eight justices who talked in oral argument seemed hostile to that position. So then that takes us to the mandate. Two options there. They could strike it down, or they could uphold it. If they uphold it, then we don't get to severability. If they strike it down, then you've got at least three options. They throw the whole bill out. If that's the case, they don't even have to get to the Medicaid question, which is the last question. They take out the mandate and the guarantee issue and community rating requirements, pre-existing condition requirements, or they just strike the mandate. Now, if they just strike the mandate, then, you know, Jeffrey Toobin referred to the government's argument as a train wreck. Well, if they just strike down the mandate, then Congress is looking at a wreck of a bill, one which the government admits will cause great damage to the insurance industry. And so you'll see a lot of pressure if that happens to amend this right away in order to prevent the insurance companies from getting dinged in 2014 when those provisions would kick in. And then finally, there's the Medicaid question, whether or not the new requirements that Obamacare puts on the states with regard to Medicaid, that it forces on the states under the threat that they would lose all their Medicaid funding. The question is whether or not that's unduly coercive and violates principles of federalism. Again, they could go ahead and strike down the new Medicaid enhancements, or they could uphold them. But a third option, they may not have to reach that question at all, depending upon how much they sever or whether they toss the whole bill out. I would say look for the court to try and avoid this question through severability. I think that there are several ways that could do that.
In the end, what do you think the actual outcome will be?
Well, this is always something of tea leaf reading, and it's difficult to know or to state anything with certainty from oral arguments, because at times the justices are asking questions that may or may not betray what they're actually thinking. But based on a combination of the voting patterns of the justices and the questions they ask, I would say it's more likely than not that we're going to see the mandate struck down. Again, if they apply their legal standard, striking down the entire law, if it wouldn't operate as Congress intended, then they should strike the whole law down at that point as well.
Robert Uhl, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, great to talk to you again. And of course, if listeners are interested, you can get more information on this at heritage.org.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Primaries themselves. Are you aware that the number of people voting is at an all-time low in these stupid primaries? 39,000 people or something? Quorum won? That idiot moron throwback who couldn't even be a junior high school principal is now celebrating that he won in a state with 39,000 people? I mean, who went to the polls? Do you know that the ratings of cable television have gone down through the floor? Do you know that people are turning off from the political process in this country in droves? They're listening to sports. They're listening to morons who rub their crotches and have gold chains and sing with 50 words of English. Anything but politics. So I run a big risk in getting political on The Savage Nation. And believe me, I am diverse enough and I have enough versatility in my armamentarium of talk that I could talk about dogs, vitamins, science, botany, poetry, the bumblebee, and I could keep you listening. In fact, my audience would grow if I talked about food, meatballs, dogs, sardines, letting a fly out of a window. I'm one of the few people who is versatile enough in the history of talk radio to do this, and I'll probably be around after all the others are gone. I'm going to make a prediction right now. It's all up to God. It's not up to the radio people. It's really up to God. I have a feeling that after the election of 2012, the idea of political talk radio will be over. It'll be dead in the water. But Having said that, I will be the only one surviving, or one of the few surviving on the national syndicated level, because the people want more than just bashing Obama or bashing the Republicans. However, on a day like today, do you think I am obligated? Don't you think I'm obligated to talk about the fact that the U.S. Marines were forced to disarm when the fraud Leon Panetta flew in to get on his hands and knees and apologize to the... Did you hear what they're calling them? To the noble Afghani people? That's what the schmuck general says over there? To the noble people of Afghanistan. You mean every dirtbag throwback is noble, but every American is not noble? We're not noble, they're noble? 14th century lunatics who beat their wives and children, they're noble? While the American who slaves for this bum in the White House is not noble? Slaves for this bum could fly around in Air Force One and bankrupt the Treasury? We're not noble? Sacramento, Shirley, you're next up. Bring back the draft or not?
Bring it back. Bring back the draft immediately.
Why?
Because I think everybody needs to serve it. When you're sending these poor guys over there for 3-4 terms, you need to have a fresher army so that you don't have these kind of incidents happening overseas.
Doesn't it look as if this communist administration doesn't trust their own troops?
It does. I emailed my representative, which is McNerney, who keeps telling me he's for the vets, and I asked him to impeach this guy this morning. Haven't got an answer yet, but I'll get my thing, whatever I get all the time, that he's doing a good job and all the other BS that he always tells me. But at least I'm trying.
All I can say is it's Obama and the liberal politicians around them, the anti-war, lifetime hard left fanatic Leninists around Obama, the college boys and girls who hate military, hate guns. Hate weapons, hate ammunition, especially they hate the Marines. You got to understand something. They hate and distrust the U.S. Marines more so than any other element of the U.S. military. They distrust them for good reason. It's because the U.S. Marines are the last certifiable element of the U.S. military that we can count on. And I'll let it go at that. Let's go to the other callers in this country. Mississippi, Anthony, go ahead on the draft question. You take the opposite point of view. Tell us why. Yeah, Anthony, talk. You're on the radio.
Sorry about that. For me, no on reinstating the draft. My reasons being, I'm in the military myself. And if you reinstate the draft, I see that as forcing people to join the military. And me being in the military, I would much rather serve beside somebody that wants to be here versus somebody that was forced to join the military.
Well, it seemed to work for us in World War II, forcing people into the military. You know that not everybody wanted to be drafted. You know that, don't you?
Oh, I agree to that, and the fact that...
Well, what are we going to do when China, which has 30 million extra men, decides to initiate its muscle against us? What are we going to do, wait for the last minute to reinstitute the draft?
No, I see your point there. I can just foresee that if that happens to happen...
Well, of course, what you're saying makes sense to a great extent, which is that at least with an all-volunteer force, you have people who are, on the face of it, quite patriotic. And when you get a generalized draft, you're not going to have the same pool of patriotic individuals that you would with an all-volunteer force. But this idea of an all-volunteer force was instituted during a time of peace. It certainly isn't working anymore. When you've got men rotated over and over and over and over again, they're being destroyed. They're being destroyed by the evil contracting machine, the military-industrial complex. You win a free copy of Trickle Down Tyranny, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Las Vegas, Mark, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I just want to say that it's a nice theory to say that you want people that are voluntary serving next to you, but it's totally a violation of the Constitution to force servitude in the draft. And the next thing you got is Lincoln killing...
So in other words, you think that during World War II there should have been no draft?
Right. Because you can take...
So in other words, you're in favor of... You would have been in favor of the Nazis winning and dominating the world?
No, but I think Patrick Cannon...
Wait a minute. Excuse me. You can't think from one decision to the next of what your statement would lead to? That we would have no army to protect us? Michael, don't you understand what you're saying?
Michael, you made the assumption that we would have lost World War II if we didn't go there when we did, right? You're making
excuse
a lot of
me?
Sense.
You mean we would have won World War II without an army?
We would have won it, but we could have delayed our entry. That's been...
Whoa. What are you saying? Let's go back to World War II since we're talking about it. And I'm arguing that without a draft, the Nazis would have been victorious, and we'd all be speaking German, and most of us who would have opposed Hitler would have been lampshades by now. You're saying that we would have won World War II without a draft? How?
Yes, yeah. How? By the facts getting across the ocean to what is actually taking place, and you would have got an influx of voluntary serving people. I mean, that would have been a no-brainer. That was happening.
Wait a minute, sir. You're making idiotic statements that have no validity whatsoever. You're saying we would have had enough men to volunteer to fight Hitler?
Yes. Because
where do you get your information from? Where are you getting this from? This absurd idea.
Well, do you agree that Patrick Buchanan?
No. Wait a minute. Don't chuckle. You're having a serious discussion on national radio, and it's not good enough that you chuckle like you're in a barroom.
Okay, I won't chuckle, but Michael, you're getting all elevated when I'm speaking some true facts, which are that we could have delayed our entry into World War II and still won it. Do you agree with that, or do you think we had to get in when we did?
Well, that means you're an idiot in terms of historically blank man. You have no idea what you're talking about. If you had studied World War II as I do, and I'm an amateur historian, I don't claim to be an expert, I can give you at least 10 different events. Incidents, rather, that had we not won these little battles in time, we would have lost World War II. Savage.